Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. Text number 10. Etavat yatma jayar virda karya yapachitir gurao shaktya pramatayar grihyeta sadadam gatamat sadai Etavat yatma jayar virda karya hyapachitir gurao shaktya pramatayar grihyeta sadaram gatamat sadai. Just exactly like this. Atmajai, by the offspring. Vira. Oh, hero. Karya should be performed. He certainly. Apachitihi, worship, gurao, unto the superior, shaktya, with full capacity, apamattai, by the sane, grihita, should be accepted. Sa'adadam, with great delight. Gatamatsadaihi, by those who are beyond the limit of envy. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O hero, your example is quite befitting a son in relationship with his father. This sort of adoration for the superior is required. One who is beyond the limit of envy and who is sane accepts the order of his father with great delight and executes it to his full capacity. Gaur Mohan, you want to hear this again? No, listen to this translation, Gaur. Okay? Oh, hero. Your example is quite befitting a son in relation with his father. This sort of adoration for the superior is required. One who is beyond the limit of envy and who is sane accepts the order of his father with great delight and executes it to his full capacity. Okay? Purport. When the four previous sons of Brahma, the sages Sanaka, Sanatana, Sanandana, and Sanat Kumara, refused to obey their father, Brahma was mortified, and his anger was manifested in the shape of Rudra. That incident was not forgotten by Brahma, and therefore the obedience of Manu Swayambhuva was very encouraging. From the material point of view, the four sages' disobedience to the order of their father were certainly abominable. But because such disobedience was for a higher purpose, they were free from the reaction of disobedience. Those who disobey their fathers on material grounds, however, are surely subjected to disciplinary reaction for such disobedience. Manu's obedience to his father on material grounds was certainly free from envy. And in the material world, it is imperative for ordinary men to follow the example of Manu. That is implying that it's even better to follow the example of the four Kumaras, or at least to recognize that they are superiors. Not that we should imitate them. We should not imitate the four Kumaras by disrespecting all our authorities. You know, we'll start with disrespecting our material mother and father, and then we'll criticize our gurus and our teachers and everybody else in the world. That's not an appropriate imitation of the four Kumaras. What they did was for a higher purpose. They are glorified. They live in Tapoloka, just below Brahma's planet. And they're glorified as great mystic yogis and devotees. Their devotion is of a sort of neutral kind. They're engaged mostly in meditation, and they promote meditation as the means of devotional service. Still, they're greater than Manu. Manu is the father. Manu is one of the Prajapatis. The Prajapatis live generally on Marhar Loka, although Manu is the ruler of the earth planet. Marhar Loka is above Swarga Loka, so the Prajapatis, the sages, who are responsible for populating the universe, they are superior to the ordinary demigods. Swarga Loka is a place where there is envy. When Gopukumara was visiting, he stayed in Swarga Loka for some time. Actually, he became Indra too. But before he did, maybe he didn't become Indra, I don't remember.
He did.
He did. That's our phone. Is that ours? Anyway. Whether he was Indra or not, Snat Kumara visited. He was actually on his way back from visiting the lower planets. And Gopakumara, as usual, didn't know who he was. And he asked the demigods, and they didn't answer him. And Sanatana Goswami explains, it was out of envy. They couldn't tolerate that here's somebody better than them. So they didn't say anything to explain who Sanatana was. Brihaspati, Gopakumara asked him, and then Brihaspati explained who Sanatana was and how he's greater than all these associates of Indra. Because on this Swarga Loka, there is subtle manifestations of envy and lust, which is not found. On Mahar Loka, there, the Prajapatis, their grihasthas, they have their wives and they have their dynasties, but they're more or less free from envy, and they keep their sense agitation under control. They strictly control their senses. But greater than them are the Naishtika celibates headed by the four Kumaras who live on Tapoloka. So therefore, Prabhupada is politely indicating, without saying anything disrespectful toward Manu, he is indicating to us that the position of the Kumaras is superior, and that ordinary men should follow the example of Manu. Vaishnavas should especially follow. We should owe our respect to Swayambhuva Manu because he's also a pure devotee, but he was acting as guru for the materialists. He taught the Karmakanda path. So we don't want to follow that Karmakanda path. So we respect Swayambhuva Manu, and we may make use of his Manu Smriti, but it's not our primary Shastra. We don't understand our basic understanding of the view of the world from it. Just like Mahabharata. The Mahabharata is composed by the same Srila Vyasa who composed Srimad Bhagavatam. But it's actually displaying a lower level of realization. Not that the author has less realization, not that he wrote it on a day when he wasn't thinking straight, but he wrote it for people who were audience who had less capacity to understand. Stri Shudra Dridra Bandunam Treina Shuti Gochara. The lower class women, Shudras and unqualified Brahmanas, they can't understand the Vedas. And Bhagavatam is also on that level. They can't understand the Bhagavatam. So therefore, Mahabharata was presented for them. It's not full of heavy philosophy. It's mostly full of adventure with some philosophy. And the worldview that it presents is simplified. There's no mention of Vaikuntha as the ultimate goal of life. You know, nothing other than Swarga, attaining heaven, is described in the Mahabharata. And there are other simplifications. There's a simple worldview for simple, ordinary people who aren't even ready to understand that there's a spiritual world. Like that, Manu presents a view of life based on one's material duties, according to one's assignment to one of the varnas and ashramas. And he describes how people can live properly according to their position in life. What they're allowed to do, what they're not allowed to do, what the punishment is for different transgressions, and so on, how to stay clean. We can also follow those rules as far as they're applicable to our situation, our time and place, and the fact that we're serving Krishna. But it's not our primary authority. Neither is the Mahabharata. So it's said by Vaishnavacharyas, when there is apparent contradiction between Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam, we have to simply take the opinion of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, we take that as our prime authority. Everything else scriptural is judged according to the standard, according to the opinions expressed in Srimad Bhagavatam. There's ultimately no contradiction. Everything is reconcilable, but we may not understand the reconciliation. We may not have the information how to reconcile everything in Mahabharata with everything in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But if we accept the authority of the Bhagavatam, then everything will gradually become clear. If we become doubtful because there's apparent conflicts, and we decide not to accept any scriptural authority, then where are we left then? Then we're cast back down into ignorance. Anyway, imperative for ordinary men to follow the example of Manu. And it's strongly advised for Vaishnavas to follow the example of such great devotees as the four Kumaras. We will reject our material duties if a conflict with our spiritual responsibilities. Hare Krishna. Okay, so are there any questions or comments?
So Mahabharata belongs to the Itihasa category?
Yes, yeah. Itihasa category is not a big category, mostly Mahabharata, Ramayana, and a few other books. A few minor books. Epic history. Difference, technically, is an epic history usually has a single plot and a single set of characters, whereas a Purana describes many things and involves many people. It doesn't not limit. It's like an encyclopedia. It's not limited to one topic, one story. Okay, but an epic is more unified.
And from spiritual point of view, I would say Purana stand one step above itihasas, or just there is no such a like comparison there?
Well, Mahabharata is given great credit as the fifth Veda. So Mahabharata is great authority. It's not, you can't say that in general the Puranas are better than the Itihasa. They're pretty much on the same level, and there's some things said in the Puranas that we would have to modify or disagree with, and also some things that are said in the Mahabharata. So it's not that altogether one is better than the other. They're better in different ways, each of them. The Puranas?
Yes.
Well, you know, the Puranas are meant to be studied by Brahmanas and then taught, recited to the other people. Mm-hmm. So the Puranas are more Brahminical than Mahabharata. Sorry? Well, suttas are supposed to recite Puranas, that's true, yeah. But you know, traditionally, many Brahmanas busy themselves in studying Puranas, especially those who are not really top-class pundits. You know, just run-of-the-mill Brahmanas. They spend their free time when they're not working in the Dukan to sit and read some Purana, maybe Mahabharata, or Ramayana, yeah. Okay.
I saw that woman every single day reading, I don't know, maybe Ramayana, passing by Haridev.
Oh, Mama,
yes.
Mama, yeah.
The old lady there?
Vishnu Purana. Every single day. Every
yes.
Every morning when I'm coming here, this is when I'm coming
it's
past
like
at 7
o'clock. Like 100 years old.
And
like
evening also, just passing by all day, sitting next to the woman.
Yes.
She really cannot sleep.
But it's a matter of preferences. You know, some people like that will be reading Mahabharata, some will be reading some Puranas, some will be reading Ramayana. They're all basically on the same level. They all appeal to a similar audience.
I just was thinking that it's not that I doubt very much, but out of injunction or out of some, I don't know, duty she needs. She has some space for that.
Yes. Yes. Maybe she had, you know, her guru told her to do it or something, but, you know, but she's into it. Yes. Well, okay, I mean, these books appeal to pious people. If the book did, you know, if the book wasn't suitable, then no matter how much you read it, she wouldn't get anything out of it. Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhagavata, Vihiji.